Blog Talk Radio.
A to Z Sports Live Holiday Edition. Happy holidays, everyone. Adam Barazzani joined by Zachary Shapiro and Umar Khan. The doctor is in the building. We have a lot to get to. Obviously, we haven't been on the air in quite some time. Well, we're going to break down the NFL season, specifically the Giants' playoff hopes and the Jets' playoff hopes, both. Kind of in a similar position, if you want my point of view. We'll get to that after we talk about the Knicks, who suffered a pretty bad loss against the Orlando Magic this evening. Other than that, they were playing well the past couple of games, but I know Zach is fuming right now at Derek Fisher and his coaching decision. Zach, what do you have on the Knicks Magic game this evening? Zach? Yeah, Zach.
Zach? Is Zach on right now?
What is going on?
Adam, what did you think about what happened today?
I didn't really watch the game, so I wanted Zach. Zach, are you on?
Oh no.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
There we go.
Oh, now I hear you. Yeah. Okay, sorry. It must have been some bad wiring. Umar, you got to get on that. Anyway, the Knicks coming in on a four-game winning streak, a chance to go over 500 for the first time in a long time. And, you know, it was a game where Orlando took an early lead, came down in front, and the Knicks kept chipping their way back. But Adam, very frustrating in towards the end of the game. Fisher taking out Porzingis with about 7 minutes left. To get him a little rest, I understand that, but never putting him back in until there was like a minute left in the game. And then the decision to also keep in Jerin Grant down the stretch. I mean, Lance Thomas understood. Lance Thomas having a game of his life. You know, he went 9 for 9 from the field. You can't take him out. You can't take out Melo. You can't take out Aflalo, even though he was struggling, because he's been just so great overall. But to have in Lopez and Jerin Grant, I don't know what goes on with Lopez. He's a frustrating player because he has good moves down low. He gets some blocks, but he seems to just disappear in the fourth quarter, whether Fisher plays him or not. When he's in the game like he was today, he was pretty much not there, at least offensively. And defensively, he didn't do much to stop Vucevic either. So, I think you want the offensive guy out there, and the Knicks were trying to come back. So that's why you should have Porzingis out there. And Jerin Grant, while he was having a nice game, he'd have someone else out there. I don't think Calderon was the answer. I thought Galloway might have been a better option there. Calderon, he just does not get assists. He does not get assists. I was looking up his stats earlier. He gets less than 4 assists a game. I mean, for a starting point guard, that's pretty pathetic. On a team where, there's a lot of passing involved, a lot of triangle offense stuff, a lot of, pick and pops. I don't know. Overall, Adam and Umar, the Knicks point guard situation is pretty bleak. I mean, Galloway's a good shooter. Grant is young, has good speed. But Calderon, I feel like he's just, over the hill. He had some nice games occasionally from 3, but he does not get the job done day in and day out. And if the Knicks want to get better, that's the position to focus on, Adam, is the point guard position. What do you think? Well, yeah, I thought that was going to be an issue heading into the season. Although, overall, I like Galloway's performance so far this season, and I 100% agree with you. He should have been in the game in the last few minutes, especially after Jerin Grant took some very questionable low-percentage shots. That's why you got to take him out and put Galloway back in, at least give you more of an offensive threat. Grant was lost those last few minutes. I have no idea why he was still in the game there. That was very frustrating.
Yeah, and he just looked nervous. He was aiming his shots. He just looked like he wasn't prepared for the situation. It was really the first time he was in a big spot late in the game. And, Fisher, this is not the game to do this. This is not the game to try him out in a big spot. It's not like Galloway and Calderon are hurt. No, they have other options. And he clearly looked like he was intimidated, and there was no reason to be out there. Umar, what were your thoughts?
Yes, I agree with you guys. I think that Kristaps Porzingis should have been out there towards the end of the game. Between Jerin and Grant,
we weren't even saying that, honestly. I wasn't saying that. I was saying Galloway.
Listen, Porzingis was a little off today. I still think Porzingis has to be the guy who's out on the court towards the end of the game. And honestly, from a Grant versus Galloway perspective, do you really think it's that significant of a difference having Grant in versus Galloway? I know Grant had some bad shots, but the guy is great. You know, he's a great transition player. He can actually, I think he's actually a better passer than Galloway. Galloway's more of, you know, a three-point shooting, almost specialist at this point with the way that Galloway can shoot threes. I don't know if it's necessarily such a huge deal that it was Grant, not Galloway, but I think Porzingis definitely should have been in there. You know, this is one of the cornerstone-type players on the team besides Carmelo Anthony. And, you know, they talked to him in the postgame. He was kind of brushing it off, saying all the right things. But come on, you got to have Kristaps Porzingis out there in that situation. Overall, I think the Knicks actually did pretty well. I think what they're doing these last four games, where they get this four-game winning streak, though, is that they're getting a lot of output from people that you don't really expect it from. And today, you talk about Lance Thomas. It's a 24-point performance, 9 of 9 from the field. The guy didn't miss a shot. Almost had basically a perfect game, aside from a couple of turnovers. But it was an unbelievable performance. And he's someone now, you look at over the last 10 games, he's someone you could totally rely on, 100%. The guy comes off the bench, and he's a really big spark plug. And I think that's a big positive. And him, Kylo Quinn, guys like these who are really helping the team and leading them through this four-game win streak, that's really, I think, a positive thing to take away from this. Do you guys have any comments on what is transpiring now with this bench team, especially Lance Thomas and what happened today?
Well, from my perspective, it's so frustrating that Lance Thomas is 9 for 9 with 24 points, and they still lose the game. Usually when you have a bench player go off like that, you win that game. So it's kind of a waste on that perspective. But as far as, I've been harsh on Thomas over the past few weeks. I still don't trust him to be a big-time bench weapon. He's more of a 3-and-D guy, which in this day and age you kind of need on a good NBA team. So if he can be that 3-and-D guy, I am 100% for that, and that would be a great addition to this roster. But as far as the rotations go and the substitutions, I'm really perplexed. It's just such a weird I don't even know. I can't even consider it a rotation because it's just like a different lineup and a different number of minutes for each player each night. I understand he's trying to do, I guess, matchups, but like at the end of the day, you need, you know, you can create your own matchups by putting the best players on the court at the same time. And just having, like, Lopez is usually never in the fourth quarter. For some reason, they played him tonight. But, I mean, they've been going small, too, with Porzingis at the 5 in the fourth quarter. And looking at his stats, he was 3 of 12, but he had 8 boards and 4 blocks in 25 minutes. So defensively, it seemed like he was doing okay. And he was the only one on the team, one of the few on the team with a positive plus-minus. So from that, I mean, just looking statistically, again, I didn't watch enough of the game to say whether or not he should have been on the court in the fourth quarter. But at least he gives you some options there, because offensively they were kind of at they were stalling in the last few minutes with Grant leading the way. And in the fourth quarter, Melo needs the ball. He needs to take most of those shots anyway. So bad job by Grant. Bad job by Fisher. Zach, any last thoughts?
Just sort of a note that Carmelo, I don't know if you caught it, at some point he was limping on the court. He did mention to reporters that he does have a sprained ankle. Didn't say how severe it was, but it is a sprained ankle. I mean, he finished the game fine. I mean, 10 for 17 overall. So you'd think he'd be okay, but just him look out for the sprained ankle. And you made a good point there. You know, it's very inconsistent matchups. And like you said, Fisher seems to be playing off the other team. Why can't the other team play off the Knicks? I mean, maybe that's something for the future to look forward to when the Knicks can bolster the roster even more. But you do like seeing the bench playing a little better. Overall, we were concerned that, you know, early this year the bench was a complete detriment. Now the bench comes in and at least keeps the game, you know, where it is, or sometimes occasionally makes things better. You know, so the emergence of Lance Thomas is great. Hopefully he can become, you know, a guy that can consistently help off the bench like Williams has from time to time, and Galloway. So it's been inconsistent, but a little better. A little better safe on the bench, and hopefully keep it going.
Another thing that I guess we kind of overlook here is that we're going to be critical of Derek Fisher. We'd be critical of some of these players. You also have to tip your hat because the Knicks are facing a pretty good team in the Orlando Magic. You even think coming off a game that they're playing yesterday, a really tight game, the Knicks' schedule, including this game against the Magic, for the next 10 games, they're 500 going into today's game. Their next 10 games are absolutely brutal. And I think these next 10 games are so far 0-1 so far on this 10-game set. It's really going to make or break this team. Are they going to be able to be a 500 team after these 10 games? Are they going to end up – they could technically go, 7-3, but they could also go 0-10 because they're facing the Hawks a few times, the Heat, the Cavs, the Spurs. Just a really, really tough schedule on this, even the pesky Celtic team and such. So I think you got to keep your eyes open for the next 9 games. They already start off 0-1. Look out for the next 9 games and see if, what the Knicks are made of, to see what they're going to do here.
And don't worry, people are saying the 10-game stretch. Sorry, I'm going to talk. People are saying 10, but isn't it really 11-game stretch, including Chicago? I mean, Chicago's no slouch. And how bad are the schedule makers? 3 games against Atlanta over 7-game stretch? I mean, how can you do that? That just seems totally preposterous, but it is what it is. But you know what? It's also the East. The East is so deep in terms of talent that just about any game, unless you're playing, the 76ers, seems like a tough game. So, the Eastern Conference is won the record with.
It's like the East and the West kind of flipped from last year to this year. The West have, sub 500 teams that are in the playoff picture right now. The East have, basically everyone over 500. It's crazy.
Yeah, and on Zach's point, the East is so strong this year, very deep. In the Eastern Conference, there are really only 3, maybe really 2 teams that I feel somewhat confident going into a game against, and that's the 76ers and the Nets. The Bucks at 11-18 have given us a lot of problems. It seems like they match up well against us, and the Greek Freak has been able to shut down Carmelo in a few games. And the Wizards, I guess, 12-14, we beat them in that one game, but that's not going to be an easy game. So the Eastern,
no.
it's going to be very hard making the playoffs in this conference at this point, because the Magic, all these teams are good. I'm actually surprised the Hornets are 15-12. I didn't think they'd be that good, but right now, you can't really say the Knicks are deserving of a playoff spot looking at those teams in the East. That top 8 and top 9, 10 even are rock solid. And when you look at the Western Conference, there aren't as many 500 teams, but Warriors, Spurs, Thunder, those are 3 of the top, I would say, top 4 teams in the league. That's them and the Cavs really that make up the top 4. And in my opinion, those are the only 4 teams that have a chance of winning the whole thing this year. So while the West did overall become less deep as a conference, I still think they have the better chance and the more teams who can actually win this whole thing. But as far as the scheduling goes, it's been tough for the Knicks. And this 10-game stretch, while I don't know if it will necessarily make or break their season, if they get by winning 5 of these games or whatever, 5-5, 5-6 for the next 11, that'd be good. I would sign me up for that right now, 5-6. But it's going to be tough because that schedule is brutal and the Knicks are not playing consistent basketball right now. One more thing on the Knicks. As we discussed before, they really need some backcourt help. I think they're going to have to make a trade. Not sure who they can give up. They have some bigs they might be able to unload, maybe a Serafin or maybe a Kylo Quinn. And I'm not even sure who's available. I know Brandon Jennings has been thrown out there. I'm not a big fan of his, but at this point he's probably an upgrade over Calderon and everyone else we have in the backcourt. Any thoughts on potentially adding a point guard or at least a backcourt player to add to our rotation? Zach?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I was saying earlier, I think it'd be great. But Jennings, he might be a little bit too of a high-volume shooter for the Knicks. It was such with Anthony and Porzingis, how much they both shoot. But, he just needs someone who can be more of a floor general. I don't feel that way with Calderon. I don't feel like he's in charge. He's the guy that's going to run the show in the game. Yes, Melo does that a lot himself in the fourth quarter, but you need a guy who, can get people in rhythm, get people going early on. And I don't think Calderon's that guy. It's just not his game, at least at this point in his career. So I think any kind of addition they can make in terms of the point guard position, Adam, would be helpful.
Umar, you have any names that you would want to throw out there as potential
targets? Well, no, Stephen Curry. No, but I mean, I'll tell you what. I think.
What? Stephen Curry?
I think, look, yeah, that'll be great to get. Listen, I don't think that it's really as huge a deal. I mean, if you get the help, it'll be great. The Knicks are right now built around a Carmelo Anthony slash triangle type offense. If Carmelo Anthony's not going to iso the ball, and in a triangle offense, it's not really a point guard facilitating offense. It's more of a point guard sort of acting like a Calderon or Langston Galloway sitting out there for 3-point shots while you get the wing player like a Carmelo Anthony or maybe a Porzingis type of guy who actually tries to create. So I really don't know if it's that imperative, honestly, to get to this point, but sure, yeah. I think Curry would be a great player to get.
Yeah.
I did the trade machine, and I think there's a way we could get Steph Curry and only give up Kevin Sarafin and I think Calderon. So
did you see my trade machine trades?
Yeah, what was that? It was like a 3-team convoluted deal.
Here, I have it right here. I'll break it down. Zach, I think Zach liked the 3-team one, right, Zach?
Yep.
All right, so we had the Knicks, the Hornets, and the Trailblazers, all looking to make deals, I would say. The Knicks getting Nick Batum, Marvin Williams, and C.J. McCollum. And the Hornets getting Carmelo, Gerald Henderson, and Myers Leonard. And then the Trailblazers might need more than this, but right now they're getting Spencer Hawes, Cody Zeller, and Langston Galloway. So, a first-round pick might need to go to the Trailblazers from the Hornets. But that could work, guys. Salary cap-wise, it fits. So
let's do it.
I don't know who we have to talk to, but I think it's a good trade for everyone. Because Batum's a free agent after – I think it's only a one-year deal. Marvin Williams, also a free agent. McCollum would be a great player for us, obviously. Charlotte, you know, Michael Jordan wants a star. He gets that star in Carmelo with some good – backcourt help and Gerald Henderson, Myers Leonard in the front court. That's a playoff team right there. And the Trailblazers are rebuilding, so they get a first-round pick, a solid low-cap player in Langston Galloway, and Spencer Hawes. It's pretty good. I think it's pretty good. The trade machine is a lot of fun. I recommend all our listeners give that a try. All right, so I guess that's enough of the Knicks. Well, if anyone has anything else to add, we'll shift to the NFL. We'll start with your guys' team, the G-Men, who suffered a pretty bad loss. Against the Charlotte Panthers. Oh, my God. Carolina Panthers.
Hornets.
I think they play near Charlotte, at least.
Yeah.
I mean, then the Giants really needed to win. Well, I'll let you guys talk about their playoff scenario, but tough loss, 38-35. They came back, which was admirable. Beckham looked like an absolute fool on the field, and he was suspended and that was deserved. Umar, what were your thoughts overall on the Giants-Panthers game, and then give me your perspective on their playoff chances at this point?
Well, first of all, I thought the Giants did a great job in coming back, having that great – they were down 28 points against an undefeated team. They – came back, tied the game, and they just, you know, end up losing in the last few seconds, which actually happens quite often with the Giants. But if you look at the Giants, they've actually played pretty well this season. I don't think they will be able to make the playoffs, especially since Washington just demolished it on Sunday, and now they're going to be – well, actually, the Bills kind of came back. Washington had a great game. They're actually going to probably – I don't know. They're up by a game right now. I think the only way the Giants can make it is if the Giants win the next two games – and if Washington loses the next two games, I think that's really the only way the Giants can win it. And the Giants are going to face a tough Minnesota team, and they're going to play a Philly team where, you know, the division could be on the line. And on the next week's game, they're not going to have Odell Beckham Jr. So I think, you know, it's obviously very slim chances. I don't think Coughlin's going to be fired. I think the Giants actually played pretty well all year. I know some people might disagree with that, but I'm stand hard on that. The Giants played a really good job all year. The situation that happened on Sunday – now, listen, Beckham did play really poorly in terms of sportsmanship, in terms of cheap shots. He definitely should have been suspended. I don't know why people are giving Norman the slide, though. This guy is he's, you know, a punk himself. I mean, you actually had Cam. There's pictures of him. Look it up on the internet of Cam Newton, his own quarterback in training camp, like choking this guy out because of his attitude problem. And then they come out with some sayings that there was some profanity and homophobic statements, and, you know, Odell felt threatened by a bat or something that they were going with. So I guess that's what kind of ticked Odell off. But let's not act like
wrong. I didn't understand the bat thing. Can you explain that? I don't understand.
So
is it like
Carolina Panther players come out on the field pregame with a bat? They have a bat to sort of say, like, you know, we're going to hit a home run today, or, you know, we want to pound it, you know, to the other, weird symbolic things. But they come out with a bat, which is kind of weird and shady. And I think what Beckham was implying was that they were sort of threatening
gestures.
Oh, come on,
that's first thing to beat him up with a bat? What is this? This is the NFL. This isn't like West Side Story. I don't understand that. That makes no sense if that's actually one of the reasons he gave. And I think
it's one of the reasons
after
the Giants are throwing around.
Hey,
you know what? When you're out on the field and you're so locked in and someone shows up with a bat, it kind of throws you off a little bit.
What does he think they're going to do with the bat in the middle of the game?
It's football. You know, it's football players.
So they're not playing baseball, exactly. I don't understand why they need a bat.
Exactly, that's the thing. Well, why do they have the bat? That's what my question. Why are they coming out pregame with a bat?
Why does it bother him? That's the main question. Who cares?
Well, it's one thing to be shouting profanity or that without a bat. Speaking with a bat, I don't know. That's what I don't know.
All right, Zach, your thoughts on Batgate?
It's all pretty comical, but I mean, I guess what the report is that Beckham felt threatened by the bat, and also felt that they were making obscene comments towards him while holding the bat. Apparently, their practice squad player Marcus Ball was holding the bat. Norman, the defensive back, later grabbed the bat but didn't engage in any pregame words. They claim that they heard the Panthers defensive players directing anti-gay slurs and explicits at Beckham before the game. Yeah. I mean, it's just a silly reason to act like a lunatic on the field. I mean, Norman is no gentleman any stretch, but just absurd with Beckham and his behavior, especially the helmet hit. I mean, he could have given the guy a severe concussion or something. So. For that hit, I do understand why the penalty is given, but certainly running wild.
At certain points during the game, you can make the argument Beckham wasn't even playing football; he was just trying to hit people. And that was ridiculous.
Well, I mean, there's also clips of Norman literally going at Beckham, punching his face and trying to kick his head and stuff. So I don't know why. I mean, because Norman made these comments post game, and Odell is a much Norman's a great cornerback. Great shutdown cornerback, but Odell's a much bigger superstar who probably did worse during the game, so all the attention's on him. But Norman is not some innocent bystander who's just victimized by Beckham. This guy is an instigator, and he also participated in everything. And for all these shots at Beckham, I think it's sort of unfair. I think you need to hold Norman to another account. And so far, enough come out on Norman so far, who should at least be fined, you know, if not suspended as well. So we got to keep your eye on Norman, too. But that was, I think Beckham should learn from this, go on and try to be tougher, you know, mentally. And I mean, he had a great game, too. He's still, you know, over 70 yards. He was shut down for a lot of the first half, but he got a big touchdown late, had a big play late as well, over 70 yards receiving.
Should have had that touchdown on his drop, though. That was a
bad drop.
Oh,
yeah. There were a couple of big missed opportunities. Don't even get us started. It was, you know, a missed pick six by Rogers Cromartie, a missed, you know, bomb right there to Beckham Jr. I mean, the Giants could have really had this game. I mean, I guess it's a story of what the Giants season is like, basically. It's so interesting whenever I watch the Giants, because the Giants are a team where if you watch them, if you take like six plays out of the game, the Giants are like look like the best team in the NFL. But because of these just terrible plays that are just thrown in there with horrible turnovers and big drops or things like that, the Giants are like under 500 team right now. It's crazy. They're sixth in the league in offense, even with their terrible, you know, drops and no running game and all these things. They're still they score points, and their defense is great and then terrible, and then great and terrible. It's a little frustrating, but they're a good team. Unfortunately, they're probably not going to make the playoffs.
Zach.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but, you know, I don't know. As much as I love Coughlin, and I do think I do want him to stick around, do you blame him for those six bad plays, those transgressions they make on the field, whether it's a horrible pass at a horrible time, a run play that shouldn't have been called, a defensive play where people are just completely, you know, in the wrong position? I mean, I think at some point Coughlin takes some sort of blame and be accountable for those horrible plays. So, Boomer, I mean, no, I don't think he should be fired and gone because he has won two Super Bowls and, you know, is still missing Victor Cruz, but and, of course, JPP in that incident. But do you think he has to take a good amount of responsibility for what's gone on?
I mean, look, Coughlin obviously has to take some responsibility for a lot of bad, you know, clock management really comes to mind. I think the defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator can all be contributing to this. But, I mean, it's so hard. Like, when you talk about some of the games that really got away from them, and you talk about, you know, putting the blame on Coughlin or on Eli Manning and all sort of things like that, it's so hard for me to do because of the success that these guys have had in big games in the past, for me to think that, you know, it did bite us in this season, but it's so hard for me to really blame them after what they've done and think that they're really incompetent or regressing or anything like that. So it's just a really tricky, weird. If it happens 100 times, I think 95 times out of 100, the Giants get the benefit and they make the right play or something. But unfortunately, I don't know what happened, but consistently through this season, there have just been really, really bad calls, bad plays that really went against the Giants, which is kind of frustrating. But like I said, like you said, Coughlin's got to stay. I think the coaching staff in general has got to stay. They just have to somehow find a way to beef up the defense and get more consistent. I mean, it was crazy. I was talking to Zach the other time. It was about how if the games ended 75 seconds earlier, going into yesterday's game, not even including that, but if they ended 75 seconds earlier, the Giants would have been 10-2 going into yesterday, which is significantly different from being under 500 right now. So it's that close. The Giants are the only team in the NFC East who have a winning positive point differential. Everyone else is bad. The Redskins didn't win a single game on the road until 2 weeks ago. So no one's good on that division. It's just unfortunate what the Giants are set in. So, you know, looks like it might be, you know, just one New York team going into the NFL playoffs instead of two.
Well, probably neither. But just to get back on you're saying the defense was great at certain points and terrible at other points. This is one of the worst defenses in the NFL right now. Statistically, they have allowed the most yards by 400 yards. 31st in Miami with 5,500. Giants are dead last in allowing 5,900. Like, that's pretty significant.
No, absolutely. So look, this is the Giants. The Giants were down 35-7. They played terribly, gave up 35 points within about a half. Then they shut down Cam Newton consistently.
When you're up 35-7, you're going to play a different game on offense. Like, you're going to score points eventually, and the Cam Newton and the Panthers offense aren't going in that same gear the rest of the game.
Check this split for what the Giants have in the last 2 minutes of a game or in the fourth quarter. If you compare their defense for the first three quarters versus crunch time, last 2 minutes, last quarter, they're the worst team I've ever seen when it comes to the last 2 minutes of a game or when they're coming. You need to have one last stop. It's automatically impossible. They've literally lost so many games on this, and it's so easy for the other team. Other than that, you take that out of the situation, and they're actually a really good team defensively, except for these bonehead plays, bad drives, and it's this weird defensive scheme where they're almost playing prevent defense until the team gets into the red zone and then they give up a touchdown. It's absurd what's going on. I don't know if it's because Spagnuolo's first year is a complete defensive, you know, coordinator, not just a linebacker coach or whatnot, but this is something that has to improve. You think it should have improved with Perry Fuel going out of there, and it didn't. So this is something that really needs to be worked on. It's the defense, first and foremost.
It might be Spagnuolo, but it's also the fact that the defense has no one on it. Jerry Reese has done an awful job of putting together that defense. They have a bunch of no-names on that team. And when your best player is a guy with one hand, that says a lot. I honestly think Jerry Reese has to go at this point after the season. And then when you bring in a new GM, yeah. he has to make the decision whether or not to keep Coughlin. And that's going to be a tough spot for him because that could lead to a whole, the Idzik Rex Ryan situation. Although I do have a feeling Coughlin does plan to retire relatively soon, so that might be a little different.
If there's one thing I can kill Jerry Reese on, it's that he did not get enough secondary help. He went into the season with no safeties, basically. Landon Collins,
who
he just drafted. The linebacking crew he tried to beef up. He got Casillas, he got JT Thomas. They're not superstar linebackers, but he did try to beef up that linebacking crew. And he always thought the defensive line is usually something that would always generate pressure. The defensive line is not getting any pressure on the quarterback. So what he's doing is now the linebackers have to go in, and all that's left is a really weak secondary. I know Rogers Kamari is very good. Amu Kamara is okay. And then there's no safety help. There's no other corners. And then you can really pick apart that entire secondary. So it's really an organized thing where the line, although the line with, Pierre Paul or, different Ayers or different defensive tackles, although you think they could generate some pressure, that's what the Giants have done for the last decade. They're
just
not doing it.
Yeah, but that's when they had superstar defensive linemen. This year they had no one. Who's their superstar defensive lineman?
Oh, yeah, Pierre Paul came back late.
Robert Ayers.
Ayers is good. Pierre Paul.
Their defensive tackles aren't good anymore. They're terrible against the run and the pass. Their strength was a defensive line. It's not there anymore.
And the Giants actually have. I forgot what I was going to say.
Their offense has been great. I think Eli and McAdoo make a pretty good tandem. Obviously, decision making and clock management has been suspect, but. The problem has been their defense. They have no one in that team. And I think Jerry Reese has done an awful job. And if you're going to defend him for making the Beckham pick, just keep in mind that he admitted on national radio that if Sammy Watkins was still there, he would have taken Sammy Watkins over Odell. So it just happened to fall out that way that he took Odell Beckham.
You can't kill Jerry Reese. Because if you look at what he's done since he came here, he has really built the Giants a very, very strong team with, picks, with certain moves, with championships. You can't knock Jerry Reese just because
The last good deal he made.
Odell Beckham draft pick.
Yeah, I just explained that. A draft pick, he got lucky. What was the last besides Beckham? What was another good draft pick by him?
Landon Collins is a good draft pick. Just happened last year.
He's nothing special. He's not going to be.
Look, it's the first year he came out. What about
all right, but that's
Devin
too early to say.
So look,
The past 3 years. Tell me anyone else besides those two guys.
Devin Kennard. He won NFC Defensive Player last year. His first year, he won NFC Defensive Player of the Year back to back weeks with a ton of sacks, and he's just been banged up with injuries this year. It's just the Giants literally have been the most injury plagued team. Statistically,
that's
all
no,
season.
No, every team has gone through injuries. The Giants
every
have had,
team has. But,
the Giants
but,
have had Beckham healthy for most of the season. They've had their best player, Eli Manning, healthy most of the season. You got to persevere.
I'm just talking statistically speaking. They have been the most injury-plagued team all season. You go into the year and you're expecting in week four to have Beckham and Cruz, and you haven't had Cruz all year, and he's literally the third best player on your entire team, essentially, your fourth best player on your entire team, and you don't have him for the entire season, and then
but
everyone on defense.
Offense has been good this year overall. I'm saying the defense sucks. I think Jerry Reese has done an awful job the past year. I think he got a little lucky, a little fortunate with some of those superstar athletes that were already on the team. On the defensive line, and he had Eli Manning. You have a franchise quarterback like that, it makes it a little bit easier. I wish the Jets had Eli Manning. And before we move on to the Jets, Zach, I know Umar and I were bickering. Do you have anything to add to that conversation?
Umar, are you eating cereal?
Hello?
Look, I hear a little
Umar, are you eating Are you eating cereal?
No, those chips.
Oh.
They're actually veggie
everyone
straws.
Can hear it.
They're veggie straws. They're actually really. You ever have those? The veggie straws. They're kind of healthy, right? I think.
No, they're. I mean, how many calories are in them?
140 for 2 cups.
How many straws are in a cup?
I don't know.
Depends on how big the cup is.
Well, how many servings are in the bag?
I think it said 20. I'm not sure.
All right.
Yeah, but I'm going back to football real quick. Over Eats Away at his straws. I would say Reese's is a lot more brilliant than Coughlin. You know, I don't think he's doing enough to help this team get better from year to year. So I would say he's in a bigger hot seat. But of course, always the fear is if you can get rid of your GM, you're probably getting rid of your coach. So that could be a bad sign for Mr. Coughlin. But we'll see. And let's move on to the Jets. To Adam, won another game. What were you saying?
Wait, just one last thing. I don't know if we're changing the subject or not, but one last thing is I think last year Reese sort of got a pass because we were moving from Perry Fuel to Spagnuolo, so we're changing defensive coordinators thinking that the schemes would be different, which would actually help the defense. But now he knows that even with a new defensive coordinator, the defense has still been atrocious. So I think he'll actually make some splashes coming this offseason if he sticks around. So that's the silver lining that I have.
All right, well, we talked about one team on the cusp of the playoffs who probably are not going to make it. Now let's talk to another team that will probably not make it, and that's the Jets, who are now 9-5. They could end up finishing 11-5, yet still not make the playoffs because the Chiefs and Steelers are playing some of the best football in the NFL right now, and both have ridiculously easy schedules the rest of the way. Jets, you know, didn't play nice and beautiful, mistake-free game against the Cowboys, but they got it done. They had more opportunities to win that game early on, but whatever, they got it done. Overall, they did what they had to do. Now they face a Patriots team that's obviously always motivated to beat the Jets. And then the Bills, Rex Ryan's already, they're out of the playoffs, but I'm sure Rex Ryan's going to try to motivate his team for whatever reason to try and beat the Jets and not get his old team out of the playoffs. So, best case, I mean, only case, the Jets have to go 2-0. And then, honestly, from my perspective right now, I think the best chance for them to get into the playoffs is if Denver loses both their next two games and the Chiefs overtake Denver in the division, and Denver would be the odd team out in that scenario. Crazy way to think about it. But
wow,
Denver's
I see that as being a possible scenario, Adam, but that's pretty crazy. Don't the Chiefs play the Broncos this week? What?
No. Chiefs play like the Chiefs play the Browns.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then the Raiders.
I'm sorry. Right.
And the Steelers play the Ravens and the Browns. So those, both teams should go 2-0 there. And this is all, again, this is all assuming the Jets go 2-0 over the next two games. There's no given, because those are both going to be tough games. And
right.
The Broncos are now 10. Broncos are only one game ahead of the Jets right now. They're 10-4. Jets are 9-5. Broncos play the Bengals, which could be a tough game. And then the Chargers, which should be a gimme. If the Broncos go 1-1 and the Jets go 2-0, I think the Jets will have the tiebreaker over them. So that
wow,
is
there
the
you
best,
go.
Yeah, that's the best. I wish, yeah. Well, the Broncos have to lose to, yeah, right, that's right. Because if the Jets go 2-0, they'd be 11-5. Their conference record would be 8-4. If the Broncos go 1-1 in their last two games against AFC opponents, they would be the same record, 11-5, but they would be 7-5 in the conference. So the Jets would have the tiebreaker over the Broncos. And you know, that's honestly, is that crazy, Zach? I think that's the best chance they have right now.
Yeah, not crazy at all. That seems, you know, much more likely than we were talking about Kansas City and Pittsburgh. I mean, you thought Pittsburgh might actually lose this past week when they're down 17 to Denver. And then late in the game, Roethlisberger threw a horrible interception in his own, you know, in his own side of the field, which gave Denver a great opportunity to take the lead. But no, it didn't happen. Steelers ended up winning that game. Broncos, yeah, a little bit of a tailspin, you know. What's his name? They're definitely hoping to get Peyton Manning back. I mean, as well as the
How far played well last game, I gotta say.
He did. But I think they're hoping, you know, for down the stretch they could have Manning in there. But Oswald Sonny's made a name for himself, no doubt. For the Jets, it's looking pretty bleak, like it sort of is for the Giants right now. But, you know, you still have a chance. And overall, though, the team is playing near their best football of the year. Fitzpatrick has just been unbelievable. He never really had a winning team at any point in his career, but this year he is certainly leading one. Obviously, they guarantee a winning record with winning in Dallas. And just so many positives. To take away. I mean, yeah, it wasn't a blowout, but you just love the passing offense, you know, with Marshall and Decker, and of
That's
course
the best receiver combo
way.
Statistically in a Jets season ever.
Wow. So that's great. And, you know, defensively, yeah, they're facing a Dallas team that's pretty hamstrung without Romo, but they got the job done. They limited Dez to just 50 yards. McFadden had a decent game. But, solid for the Jets. And, now it comes down to New England. And you would have to say New England is much more beatable this time around than they were last time. And if you remember the last time, Adam, they were Brandon Marshall catch away from perhaps winning that game in New England. So, the game's in New England. So you have to think they have a fighting shot to win this week.
Jets will be motivated to play this game. I just hate the Patriots, and I feel like they always crush our dreams. But, Umar, any thoughts on the Jets' playoff chances?
I think the Jets, what you got to go for is you got to go for the Denver situation. Because let's say Denver loses their next two games, which they should win against San Diego, but they just only need to win one more game, and they're in the playoffs. So you're really chasing Denver.
Yep.
Chiefs and Pittsburgh, they're really, really hard to go. I think right now if you're the Jets, though, you're kind of kicking yourself. Because there are some teams here on the schedule. I mean, just off the top of my head, I think the Eagles you lost to when they were decimated. I think you lost to the Texans. I think you lost to the Bills. You know, there are some teams here that there were games that were – right now the Jets could easily have been, 12 wins right now, theoretically speaking. But kind of games got away from them. But the Jets, Patriots, this is going to be big time game, playoff implications, especially if Denver, loses. And so it'll really spice things up. So I think that's going to be a really, really fun game. And it's going to be tough. Jets have to beat Belichick. It seems like it's always that way. It seems like the Jets always have to come down to facing the Patriots with their season on the line. So should be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be more confident if Andy Dalton was healthy. I don't know how I feel about the Denver-Cincinnati game, two backup quarterbacks. That's actually an interesting game. I wonder what the line is on that game. That's a kind of a weird game now. Both teams are playing for something. Cincinnati wants home field, and Denver obviously playing for their playoff lives, to some extent. Or for the division, I guess.
Right now, Adam, on that game, Denver is a 3.5-point favorite. Yeah, the Saints just because they're home, but it is a tough.
Well, that should be a good game. I wonder, did they flex that one? Do you know?
What'd you say?
Oh.
It's a Monday night game in Denver.
Monday night. That's good. And I think they actually flexed last week. I think they flexed Minnesota Giants. Wasn't that the flex game for this weekend?
Yeah, it's flex game. I'm sure they're hoping for Beckham to be playing and Peterson. Peterson might be out too. So
that lost a lot of juice.
Yeah, unfortunately, and they can't reflex. It's too late for that. So it's going to be Giants Vikings.
Oh man. That's rough. But at least the Monday night game is good.
Look, Redskins-Philly, if Philly beats the Redskins, then this game means a lot because Minnesota's fighting for a playoff chance with Green Bay, you know, creeping and crawling, and you got the Giants who are, you know, division up for grabs. So it could be a big game, and you have the, you know, you have a big New York Giants market here. I don't know if Cincinnati or Denver.
That's the Jets Patriots.
Must have been. Some games get locked up by the channels or the networks, I should say. So that game may have been sort of what they call like held by the network, so that CBS can't or NBC can't flex it. But it would have been a good one. And
meanwhile,
some
cutting
games also
live,
have like restrictions in terms of how many games they get playing prime time.
Monday Night Football, you have Drew Brees trying to lead the Saints to a win. 6 seconds left. It's a good game moment. Down by eight. 6 seconds. They have to go 80 yards, though. But we saw with Green Bay. We saw with Green Bay did against Detroit, so you never know.
All right, well, the games to keep an eye on for week 16, Sunday, this coming up. Obviously, you have Washington, Philadelphia on Saturday night. Let's see. New England Jets, obviously, 1 o'clock game. That's obviously the highlighted 1 o'clock game. Houston, Tennessee. Houston actually is still in the picture, so they need to win. Kansas City, Cleveland is not really very exciting. Kansas City obviously needs to win that one. All the AFC South teams are really kind of still in it, I think. Is that right? Not 100% sure. Are the Jaguars still in it? I think they're only a game back, right?
Yeah, Jaguars are in it.
That's a terrible division. They're two games back. Sorry. So it's really going to come down to the Texans and the Colts probably. So both teams need to win. Let's see. Dallas, Buffalo, no. San Francisco, Detroit, no. Carolina, Atlanta, no. Pittsburgh, Baltimore. Pittsburgh obviously in the picture. Jacksonville, New Orleans, I don't think is a game anymore. I don't think Jacksonville can come back two games down at this point. St. Louis, Seattle.
Not
a
lot of good game will be Packers Cardinals out in the desert.
That's the late
game on Fox.
Yeah, that's really the only good late game at 4 o'clock. I mean, Seattle, St. Louis.
Yeah.
St. Louis always plays well against Seattle, but St. Louis is out of it, so who cares?
Right.
Not many good games this week, which is kind of surprising. You'd think there would be a lot more big games for playoff positioning, but not many.
Yeah, it's a lot of divisional battles, and not much out there. You know, I guess you could also watch the Panthers. You could continue their perfect season, but not much out there. You know, you hope that next week, or week 17, you get some good games that will decide playoff positions. But for this week, it's a pretty quiet list of games.
Do you have the lines on the games handy?
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna give a few games, the highlighted games, and then we're gonna give our picks. So, can you tell me the line on Washington, Philadelphia?
Yeah, right now